Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
Good morning, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about five lien release traps that you need to watch out for and how to avoid them. First, we're going to start by talking about the significance of a lien release. Why is a lien release legally significant, so that you can better understand why these traps are things you need to watch out for. We'll talk about the first trap, which is not negotiating the form of the release when you sign your contract. Number two, having the wrong through date or no through date on the release. Trap number three, giving a $10 release. Sometimes that can be a problem. Trap number four is not using conditional language in your releases. And trap number five is not creating exceptions to the release if you have other claims that are pending. So let's start by talking about what is legally significant about a lien release. And once you understand this, then you will understand why these traps exist and why people fall into them. So a lien release is a legal document that releases rights that you may have if you are the person signing the release, if you're the company signing the release, through a specific date. Again, it's dependent on how the document is drafted, but most releases have a through date, and any rights you have up to that through date are typically released. The reason it's important is because owners and lenders on projects want to know that when they issue a check to a contractor, that anything prior to the dates of the through dates of the release are released. They don't want to issue a payment and then find out that someone didn't get paid, and as a result, they have to pay twice. So the way they avoid that eventuality is by getting lien releases. Understand that while we talk about a document called a lien release, and most of them are titled lien releases, there may be other rights that are given away along with that lien release. So you need to read the document and understand that you may be giving up other rights, like rights for unapproved change orders, or work in place that is part of a claim, or a delay claim or time impact claim that you have that is pending. And we're going to talk about how to preserve those as well. So I'll give you a brief example of a client that we had that signed releases and gave away more rights than he was expecting. He had about $1 million worth of delay claims, but chose to hold those to the end of the job. So every month he was signing releases, and those releases were very broad in nature. The release from the contractor said that by signing this release, you're releasing all your lien rights, bond rights, claims, changes, damages, anything that this contractor had were being released every month, every time he got the check. So at the end of the job, which was about 18 months after he started, it was supposed to be a six-month job, he submitted a claim, and it was rejected based on the releases. And he came to me and he said, I'd like to pursue this delay claim that I have. And I looked at his releases and I said, you have no case here. And he decided to go forward anyways. And not surprisingly, he lost because he signed releases every month that gave away rights that he was trying to preserve. Now, had he made changes to the releases before he signed them, then he would have preserved those claims to pursue at the end of the job. Keep in mind that your perspective is different when you are giving a release and when you are getting a release. So even if you're a sub, if you sub out work, so you have vendors and subcontractors that you have hired, you want to get broad releases from them, while at the same time, while you give releases to contractors and owners, you want those to be limited. You want to preserve rights for yourself, and you want to extinguish rights of those folks below you. And we'll talk about how to do that. All right, so let's talk about trap number one, which is not negotiating the form of the release at the time of the contract. So under Florida law, Chapter 713, there is a provision in the lien law that says no one can make you sign a release other than the form that's in the statute, which is a very simple form. The problem, of course, is that if you sign a contract and that contract says that you will use either the form of release that the contractor or the owner or the subcontractor says is the form that they will accept, and sometimes they even attach an, as an exhibit that form, well, then that's the form you're obligated to use. So when you are negotiating your contract, you need to indicate that you will not use that form, that you will use the form that's found in Chapter 713. So one of the exhibits attached to most general contractor contracts is the form of release. We find that most clients, when they review their own contract, they will skim over the legal terms and conditions because they don't understand them very well. They'll spend lots of time focusing on the scope of work because that's what they understand well. And then they will skim over the exhibits. And again, one of those exhibits is a release. And that release needs to be negotiated just like any other provision in your contract. So what happens if your contract has no specific form of release? Then you should be able to use the release form that's found in Chapter 713, which again is the form of release that is used by the Sunray system, and you can find it on the Lien Zone website as well. But then what you should understand is that if you are using that form, the contractor may say to you, well, I, or the subcontractor, the owner, I need you to use this different form. And if that happens, then you need to make a business decision. Are you going to provide a release that is broader than you would like in exchange for payment? And sometimes you need to make a difficult business decision in order to get a check, so you may decide to concede and give them a release that is broader than you want. Again, that's less of a legal issue and more of a business issue. Technically, if there's no form that's required, you don't have to use a form other than that which is in Chapter 713. We have had clients have some success in convincing owners and contractors that because the statute says that that's the form that has to be used, that they will sometimes back down and use that form. So trap number two, having the wrong through date or no through date in the release. So let's talk about what the through date is. So here's a sample release, and as you see, the highlighted section says furnished through, and it has a date. That's the date that you are releasing your rights through. So what you need to make sure is that the through date and the amount of money that you are expecting to receive match. So let me give you an example. If you are expecting a $50,000 check and you believe that that releases you through the end of the month, then you would put in the release $50,000 and the through date would be the end of the month. But if they tell you that they're going to only pay you $30,000, you now need to change the through date so that the through date reflects the equivalent period of time for the $30,000. You can't leave it at the end of the month because what you have done is you have shorted yourself. A judge is not going to look to determine whether or not the two match. That is your job. If you agree to accept some amount of money, $10, $30,000, or $50,000, the only thing the judge is going to care about is whether or not you had a through date and whether that through date is valid. And if you accept some amount of money, the judge is going to presume that it is valid. So if $50,000 gets you to the end of the month and $30,000 only gets you to the 19th, well, then you need to change the through date to the 19th. Now, if there is no through date, then the law will impose a reading of the release that the through date is the day you sign the document. So be careful if there is no through date and you're expecting a $50,000 check that gets you to the end of May, but now it's September, and you sign the release today, and it has no through date, then that document will mean that you gave away your lien rights through today for that check, which is not what you intended to do.
This episode is brought to you by the Miami Construction Forum. This invitation-only group of construction professionals of all sizes and trades meets monthly for an informal lunch-and-learn session on current topics of interest, from getting paid and safety to bonding and insurance. To see the upcoming topics and request your invitation, visit MiamiConstructionForum.com.
You also have to be careful that the through date is really the through date. Let me explain what I mean by that. We have a client who has a release. He's a contractor, and that release has a through date. But if you read the document carefully, that through date is actually the day that the person that is signing the release is representing that they've paid all their bills. It has no other through date that would be the through date that the release is effective on, except for the date that it's signed. So what happens is, if someone contests the fact that they were paid through a specific date, when the release is produced, it's effective as of the day they signed it, which is always after the through date that they wanted to put in the release. So you need to read the release. What we find is that many clients perceive that a release is just a ministerial task that they have to do. I need to sign this document in blue ink and have it notarized, and then I can pick up my check. So many times they don't even read it. You need to read the releases. You need to read them every month from everybody, because you're giving up significant legal rights by this document. So you need to make sure that you understand what it says. Trap number three, giving a $10 release. Sometimes. So what is $10? You know, people ask me this frequently. Why does the release say $10? I'm picking up a $50,000 check. The reason is that in the law, $10 is just a recitation of some consideration. It doesn't really mean $10. It just means some amount of money. The problem is that it's not specific. So if you're expecting a $30,000 check, and the release says $10, and you show up and you pick up a $20,000 check, if the release doesn't say $30,000 and you accept the $20,000, it may be difficult later to argue that no, you were shorted $10,000, because the release itself didn't say what you were expecting when you were going to pick up the release. So here's the tip to remember. When getting a release, always try to get it for $10. Meaning, if you are the person that is receiving the release and giving the check, you would like that release to be for $10. So let me give you an example. If I'm a general contractor, I would love it if all my subs gave me releases that say $10. And the reason that's important is because as a contractor, if it says $10, it makes it harder for the subcontractors and suppliers to argue about whether or not they picked up a check for the right amount. This applies to you if you're a sub, so that you want your subs and vendors to give you $10 releases. Now, when you are giving a release and you are expecting a check, you should always try to change it so that it does not say $10, but actually says the amount of money you are expecting to receive. So if you're expecting a $30,000 check and the release says $10, you should cross out $10 and write in $30,000. So when is it okay to give a $10 release when you are expecting, when you are giving the release? And that is if there's no payment that's required. So understand, when you send a notice to a job, notice to owner, maybe you send a notice today and you're not starting until January. You may be asked every month from now until January to give a release, but you haven't done any work. You're not owed any money. That's a situation when it's okay to give a $10 release, because you're not expecting a check in exchange for that release. Trap number four, not using conditional release language. So what is conditional release language? Here is an example. This waiver and release is expressly conditioned upon the undersigned's receipt of blank some amount of money in paid funds. Otherwise, this waiver and release is void. So that language, when added to a document, and it can be written in various ways, this is just one example, says that unless you get the check for that amount, unless you get the actual money for that amount that you're expecting, then the release that you are giving is not valid and enforceable. So where we see this is you're asked to give a release in advance for a check that's supposed to come later. So it's not a simultaneous exchange. Whenever that happens, we would strongly encourage you to use conditional language, because if you give a release, especially if it's a $10 release, and you never get the check, then you would be giving away rights that you don't intend to. So you always want to avoid the use of $10 whenever you use a conditional release. So if you're expecting $30,000 and they give you the release they want you to sign and it's otherwise acceptable, you want to scratch out $10, you want to put in $30,000, and then if you're giving the release before you actually get the check, you want to add in that conditional language. So sometimes we hear from clients, but it doesn't matter because I'm holding the original. I haven't given the original with that precious notary stamp and the blue ink to the other side, so I should be fine, right? And the answer is no. If you sign a release and you give it to somebody, whether it's an original or copy, they are entitled to rely on it based on its terms. So if you are holding the original and perceive that that means that you haven't given up any rights, you are mistaken. Whatever rights that that release says on its face, those are the rights that you're giving up. So that's why it's so important to add conditional language, because even if you give a copy, the only way you can truly protect yourself without actually getting the money at the same time is to make that release conditional. So what we have had some clients do, and if you come to our seminars that we're going to talk about a little bit later, we pass them out. We've taken that language that I showed you, and we've turned it into a stamp so that it's easier to turn every release into a conditional release, because you just stamp it, you write in the check the amount that you're expecting, and then you can hand them out and not worry so much. All right, the last trap. Not creating exceptions to the release. So what if you have claims that you are trying to preserve, like delay claims or unexecuted change orders or time impacts? How do you do that in your release? Here is some sample language. Notwithstanding the foregoing, this waiver and release specifically excludes, and then you'll have a blank, which is reserved by the undersigned. So this language says, whatever I put in here, I am reserving. So you can reference RCOs and PCOs, so you know, pending change orders. Maybe you have a claim. Maybe you sent a letter to the owner or the contractor and you said, we've been delayed on the fourth floor. We don't know what the impact is yet, but we're calculating it. So ideally you sent that in writing consistent with the terms of your contract, and as a result, you have a date that you submitted the claim and some description. Maybe you can reference it by invoice number. So if you're a supplier and you are getting paid for invoice A, B, and C, but not D, and you want to preserve your rights to invoice D, you can add the reference to invoice D in that blank. One of the things that you have to do is you have to make sure you do it month after month. So if you have a claim for delays and you exclude it from your release this month, next month, if that claim hasn't been turned into a change order that's been approved under your contract, you need to now add that as an exception again to your contract, to your release. every month, you need to keep a running list of the exceptions to the release, and then you need to update it for each time you submit the release. Now, I hear this all the time, but if I modify the release, the owner or contractor won't accept it. This comes back to a business decision. You have to determine how important it is to get the money versus preserving those rights. And I would tell you that most contractors, while they tell you they will not accept it and they will initially reject it, at some point, especially if they need you to keep working and they don't want to hold up funding, that they will accept certain exceptions to your release, and you shouldn't give up so quickly in demanding those exceptions. Well, those are the traps, all five traps. We have this cool tool called the Calculine, which if you go to our blog, theleanzone.com/calculator, you can fill in the form and we'll put one in the mail to you. It helps you calculate your notice to owner and claim of lien deadlines. So it's nice to have on your desk so you don't have to count all of those days on your fingers.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forms on this and other construction topics, head over to theleanzone.com.